Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is Monday, February 8th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, The Bubble Buys a Bubble. Almost sounds like a Dr. Seuss title now that I just said it out loud. But this is with respect to Tesla purchasing $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin. And those of you who follow my work know that I believe strongly that the poster child, the poster children of this virtual everything bubble is Tesla and Bitcoin. So that's where we get the title for today's podcast, The Bubble Buys a Bubble. Now, the CEO of Tesla, Elon Musk, claims that they are just trying to diversify their cash holdings within Tesla, and they're also open to buying gold bullion. They're also open to buying gold ETFs and the like. Okay, say what you want. But we have Bitcoin hitting a new all-time high off of this news. And of course, a lot of this was done via social media as well. Elon Musk has a very wide following. Some could say it's almost cult-like, because if there's anybody who badmouths Elon Musk or Tesla, you're going to hear about it, just like anybody who badmouths Bitcoin is going to hear about it. We can talk about the fundamental flaws and issues that exist within both of these bubble names here, Tesla and Bitcoin, and we may do that here momentarily. But just understand, all you have to do is look at a chart of these things, especially Tesla. It's completely decoupled from reality. Both of these things at this juncture, and I think have been for quite a while, are subject to the greater fool's theory, which simply means you need a greater fool to come into the market to bid up the price so Tesla becomes $880 a share, $900 a share, etc. Further, same thing with Bitcoin. You need somebody to come in and buy it at $20,000, a greater fool to come in and buy it at $30,000. I mean, now we have Bitcoin at $46,400 per coin. This isn't based off of any type of fundamental analysis. This is a mania. This is the tulip frenzy in the Dutch economy 400 years ago. This is out of control. Everybody knows this too, and I'm somebody who pays very little attention to cryptocurrencies. Obviously, there are people who are very strong advocates for them. There are people who bash them every day. Somebody who I follow is Peter Schiff. We're similar-minded on a lot of issues. That's going to happen when you're a libertarian, when you're a free market capitalist, when you believe in the Constitution of the United States. You're going to have a lot of similarities with your views on a number of things. But he basically despises Bitcoin and just tears it to shred almost on every one of his podcasts. I stay away from it just because it doesn't interest me that much. But I think this is just part of the frenzy, and more people than not are going to end up getting hurt from this. Now, Bitcoin and Tesla both have made people millionaires. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. When you have that type of skyrocket movement in Tesla stock and in Bitcoin, if you got in at the right time and you sold it at the right time, you made a huge profit. That's fine. More power to you. I don't demonize that. What I have a problem with is people who announce that Tesla, all of this growth, all of these valuations, the price of their stock is justified. No, it isn't. People who say the same thing with respect to Bitcoin. No, it isn't. It doesn't have a history. It's not a medium of exchange. It's not a store of value. It's extremely volatile. And like I said, I'm a novice to all of this stuff, and I know enough to know that Bitcoin is not the best cryptocurrency out there. It is not the best blockchain technology that exists. It uses an immense amount of energy. It doesn't have the most efficient and effective security. It isn't the fastest payment processor or guarantor. There are other blockchain technologies and cryptocurrencies that just blow Bitcoin out of the water. And I just have to say to myself, if I know this stuff, then you would think a lot of the big advocates would have to understand this as well with respect to Bitcoin, but they continue to pump it up. Maybe that's because they know that it's ultimately just a pump and dump scheme, that they got in at a lower price and they're just trying to get more and more fools to bid it up so they can juice their bottom line. I hope that's not the case, but that's what it seems like to me more and more. I also think Elon Musk knows better than anybody that his stock price is overvalued. To me, Elon Musk, double-edged sword. I think he's a brilliant guy. I think he can be a part of the discussion on many solutions, technologically speaking, on an engineering front, thinking outside the box. I think he can drive change. I think that's good. But I also think there's a big part of him that's a snake oil salesman. And I think he knows that. And I think he understands the group. I think he understands the social dynamic, this cult of personality. And I think now at this juncture, he has so much money because of all of this that he's just having fun with it and everybody else. The reason I have a problem with it is because if any of us did this type of stuff with this market manipulation, which to me, it's just open and obvious, we'd get locked up and they'd throw away the key. It's the two-tier justice system that I just cannot stand. And that's what this is. This is what Donald Trump did on a near daily basis, touting the stock market if something wasn't going right. Oh, let me tweet something about the stock market, or let me tweet something. It's a complete lie, but it sounds good, and it'll reverse the downtrend of the day, and stocks will go up. Where was the SEC on that? This is the same thing that Elon Musk is doing. Perhaps they're related. Perhaps there needs to be a DNA test. Perhaps Elon Musk is the child, the offspring of Donald Trump. I don't know, but they are of the same mindset. This is pure market manipulation. He is the CEO of a publicly traded company. And of course, we've had some bad headlines come out with respect to Tesla recently, but a lot of this has been shoved under the rug because this is the poster child. This is the golden boy of the era. You can't have any dirt on Tesla. So when you hear articles and headlines about recalls, which are true, they get swept under the rug. When you hear about issues in China, with China complaining that there are, or at least stating that there are, quality control and production issues out of the Chinese plant. Now, that's rich coming from the Chinese, where we get nothing but cheap pieces of crap from China, made in China, Inc. But nonetheless, these are headlines that do not get a lot of attention. Why? Because Elon Musk knows how to gloss over them, throw something else out there. Distract the minions with something else. Oh, we bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin to diversify our cash position. And lo and behold, Bitcoin skyrockets $46,400 a coin right now. You think he didn't know what he said was going to move this market? This isn't the first time he said anything. He's chimed in before. He chimed in during the GameStop frenzy. He chimed in with respect to another cryptocurrency that I'm not going to mention on this program. You think he doesn't know what he's doing? That goes for the rest of them too. But there's no accountability. This is the wild, wild west. This is a mania, and more people are going to get hurt than not. And that's what bothers me with all of this too. His share price can fall 50%, and he's still going to be a multi-billionaire. But if you own it, and you lose 50%, are you still as rich as you were? Are you still living it up like you thought you were going to be able to? No. No, and these people ultimately do not care about you. This is a game to them. Wake up to this nonsense. They are not your bro. They are not your buddy. They're not sending you Christmas cards. They're not having you over for picnics and for backyard barbecues. But this is the cult of personality. This is the era in which we live. This is another telltale sign, as far as I'm concerned, of an economy and a society that is in decline and decay. And it's going to end in blood in tears. And then what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago, whatnot, Elon Musk, obviously the CEO of SpaceX as well, one of his rockets exploded. So there's been some bad headlines, some bad news coming across the wires with respect to Elon Musk and his companies. But hey, this is bubble mania, man. Just buy, buy, buy. Stocks only go up. And of course, that's what they continue to do today for no apparent reason. But because today's Monday and stocks can only go up. I mean, we hit all-time highs with M1 money stock last week, near all-time highs, Fed's balance sheet, and with a broader money aggregate, M2. That's all it is. It's global liquidity. Print more money, stocks go up. It's a huge cost to be paid, and we're starting to witness that too in commodity prices, inflation, food across the board. We're probably not going to have enough time to get into that today because there's a handful of other issues I want to discuss here. But food prices are going through the roof around the globe. We continue to see energy prices go up. We're going to do market performance segment right now, so we'll see where that stands as well. So dollar index is at 90.73, down about 0.25% right now, 90.73. Again, Bitcoin is at $46,400 per coin. Not too much movement with respect to some of the other cross-currency pairs, but the dollar is weakening across the board there. On the index front, overnight futures trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, well, all three of them, Dow, S&P 500, and the NASDAQ 100 are all flat, all slightly in the red, but all flat. Japanese cash trade is up about 0.2%. A sea of green across the pond in Europe, and a slight pullback of about 8% in the Australian cash trade. Let's see, where's Tesla at? Only putting on a gain of 1.3% today. All of the, I guess, frenzy found its way into Bitcoin instead. But nonetheless, Tesla is up 1.3%, trading at $863 per share. On the commodity price front, WTI is at $58.41 a share. Brent, $61.02. Last night, it just breached $61 as I was doing the podcast. Or I'm sorry, $60 as it was breaching the podcast. Now it's $61.02. Natural gas, $2.89. Gold and silver both had a nice day. Gold at $1,841 an ounce. Silver, $27.51. So regaining that 27 handle. Hopefully it continues north from here. Long-term bull when it comes to the precious metal space, as most of you know. Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note yielding 1.16%. So slightly down from yesterday's podcast, but still something that is going to be cause for concern for the Federal Reserve and other monetary authorities. And the 30-year, the long bond, hit 2% today. Hasn't been that high since last year. Was it last February, last January? So that's, again, the same analysis is at play here. This is being caused by inflation. The money printer going burr. Just keeps going on. It's on overdrive. This is not because of growth. I don't care what CNBC or Fox Business or Bloomberg or Financial Times or any other financial media wants to tell you. This is not because of growth. This is inflation. That's what the bond market sees. Now, people will argue, well, the inflation is coming because the growth is coming. No, the inflation already happened. That's the increase to the money supply. It's already happened. We are now witnessing the effects of it and have been for quite a while. Mainly it goes to financial assets. And the reason it mainly goes to financial assets is because that's the purpose of the policy of quantitative easing, QE. This is the regime. This is the environment we have been in since 2008, 2009. It was supposed to be temporary. It was supposed to be for emergency purposes only. But no, no, no. There is no such thing. There is nothing more permanent than a temporary government policy. And that's exactly what we continue to witness. And we talked about this many, many times before. We go over the graphs. There are Capital Economics presentations that can be found on thecapitalnews.com or our YouTube channel showing you the step-like, the stair-like pattern with respect to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. $800 billion during the great financial crisis. Now we're almost at $8 trillion within, what, 11, 12 years? This is a country in decline. We are operating as a banana republic. This is what banana republics do. So calling this a first world banana republic, I think, is appropriate. I think that's right. This is a centrally planned system. This is not free market capitalism. It's not even close. We wouldn't have half the problems that we have right now if we had free market capitalism at work. If we had politicians and statesmen, which is really what we need, in our government, we wouldn't have half the problems that we have, but we don't. We trample on our Constitution every single day, and we trample upon the values and virtues of free market capitalism. And this is why so many people are upset. This is why so many people are broke. And as I stated yesterday, I came across another survey that was conducted late last year with respect to savings rates, and we're going to have that discussion hopefully this week as well, just to give everybody an update as to where all of that stands. Not just the average, but also the median. So we know where half the country is. 50% will be above that number. 50% will be below that number. Retirement savings, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a good picture at all. In fact, unfortunately, most things are getting worse. Something else I want to discuss today is the minimum wage. As we know, the Biden administration, along with the Democrats, are attempting to push through a $15 minimum wage. Now, that might be the minimum wage in some states like California, maybe others, but for the bulk of this country, no, it's not even close. And the reason I bring that up again today is because the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, came out with their projections on what would happen with a $15 minimum wage. And get this, 900,000 people would be lifted from poverty, however the government wants to define that. But then there would be 1.4 million job losses. 1.4 million job losses at a time when we have chronic and structural unemployment and underemployment. I mentioned this weeks ago when we talked about this, when they started uttering these phrases and this notion of implementing a $15 minimum wage. I said, they almost have to be trying to be this stupid to pass something like this during a time like this. But this is what they're doing, folks. This is what you voted for. This is what you got. No split government. This is a runaway train right now with the Democrats in charge. Not that the Republicans are much better. I mean, look at how much they screwed the pooch over the past 4 years when they were in power. Don't give it to me on that. Now they're going to stand up. The Republicans are going to stand up and act tough. They didn't stop the trillion-dollar deficits before COVID-19. No. They didn't drain the swamp. They didn't do none of that. They made it much, much worse, too. They're done. Hopefully they fizzle. The GOP. Hopefully they're done. Sayonara. See you later. Now, with the Democrats in power, they're going to give themselves enough rope to hang themselves too. So this two-party system can go bye-bye. Nobody will be happier than me. But that's where we're going with it. 1.4 million job losses with a $15 minimum wage. And how destructive is that going to be for the long term with younger people not being able to find work? Because an entrepreneur, a small business, any business is going to say, you're not worth $15 an hour. Let's understand what this means, because everything's based off of emotion. There's no logic. There's no sit down, take a deep breath, understand what's going on here. You have your typical 40-hour work week times 52 weeks gives you 2,080 hours a year. Let's just round it, make it 2,000. 2,000 times $15 an hour is $30,000 a year. Businesses are in business to make a profit. They need profit to keep moving forward. They need profit to reinvest into the business. They need profits to pay their employees bonuses. They need profits to buy new plants, new equipment, new software, etc., etc. They need profit. It is not a four-letter word. It is a good thing. $30,000. Your employer better get $30,000 of value out of you at bare minimum. At bare minimum. And that doesn't even take into consideration all of his or her costs to employ you. There's taxes. There's insurance. I mean, are you full-time at 40 hours a week? Does that mean you're getting health benefits? Does that mean you're getting a 401k? Or some other type of retirement plan? Is the employer matching that? So that's more money out of his or her pocket, out of the business. Countless types of insurance, because who knows who's going to get sued, especially nowadays. Do they understand these questions? Do they even know to ask these questions? Or do they just say, well, I need $15 an hour. That's what I'm worth. That's what you're going to give me. That's not how it works. You may very well be worth $15 an hour. You may be worth $30 an hour. But that's because you have a certain skill set that brings value to the business. That business has to cover those costs. You need to generate more than what you're bringing in. Or you need to bring in more than what you cost, I should say. This is basic stuff. And I think a lot of the reason why people don't have this understanding, one, is poor education. That's first and foremost. But then you have a lot of people who are simply not trained, even when they go into business. They might not have an entrepreneur or a manager who breaks down business to them. So they're just somebody who clocks in and clocks out, but is never really trained on the background of business, of explaining to an individual the finances of that business. Here's what a balance sheet is. Here's what an income statement is. This is why this is important. This is why we pay you X amount of dollars, because I need to bring in a profit. And if I pay you an extra $10,000 plus all of your colleagues an extra $10,000, that's an extra $50,000 in operational costs that I now have. How am I going to get that back to maintain margins? And my margins might be squeezed to begin with. It's not easy out there to run and manage a company, especially for the long haul. Just because you hang your shingle out there doesn't mean that those small businesses are multimillionaires. That's not how it works. So it's extremely inconsiderate. You're worth what you're worth. If you go into a business and that business manager thinks you're worth $10 an hour and you say, no, I'm worth $12, they can say, I can offer you $10. Take it or leave it. You can take it or you can leave. That's how it works. You can go to the business next door. Hey, I'm worth $12 an hour. Fantastic. That's what I'm going to pay for this position. When can you start? Right now. There you go. That's how it works. The government coming in to mandate $15 across the board is going to be devastating. It's going to push people further out into when they're going to get their first job. $30,000 at minimum. I mean, how many pieces of equipment could that small business owner go out and invest in? A touchscreen, as opposed to having somebody, can I take your order? Just touch the screen and it'll go on another screen in the back and somebody else will make it back there. And who knows, within a handful of years, it'll probably be all robots back there because it's the same process. It's the same process. These are the same movements. You're just going to have a manager there to make sure everything runs well, customer service, maybe to fill inventory, do some purchasing. You're not going to need that many people. These people are literally running themselves out of the job because they don't understand basic economics. Minimum wage is not here for people to live off of. You know, people say, well, I have a family. You probably shouldn't have a family if you're on minimum wage. How do you start with that one? That's not my problem, Jack. It's your problem. You want to ask me for charity? That's different. You want to ask your community for charity? That's different. But to mandate this through government is not the right answer. Government is not synonymous with charity. We have two different words. We have a word called government because that does XYZ, and we have a word called charity because charities do something ABC. They are not synonymous with each other. And if government wasn't so big and intrusive, there would be more charity. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is going to be truly devastating. It's going to have extremely long-term effects. They're going to pass something. Again, it's just a matter of time. Is this going to be pushed through in the $1.9 trillion quote-unquote stimulus? Probably not, but it might be. I mean, Chuck Schumer's at the ready for all of these reconciliation programs through the budget, so it's coming at the worst time possible. Not that this was ever a good time, but at the worst time possible. And again, maybe a high schooler was going to get a job. Now he's not going to get a job until he's in college. Well, the first job you got was in college. Now it's not going to be till after that. And that's the next topic I want to talk about because they continue to bring up student debt forgiveness. Perhaps by executive order. Perhaps up to, I don't know, what am I seeing, $50,000? You know, there's a lot of things that can be a breaking point for somebody. And all the things that I talk about here on a daily basis, you would think, oh my, you know, that would have been it. This is going to be it for me. This is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back for me if they do this. By executive order, by an act of Congress, whatever. This is ridiculous. We have about $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. That's a big number. That is a big number. And the government is the underwriter of all of this. The government is guaranteeing all of this. Well, who's the government? You and me. One man's debt is another man's asset. So the debt is obviously of the students. And some of these people are still of the student age, typical student age of 20s, 30s. And then there's people who are still paying their student debts who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s. Oh, my goodness. So it's their debt. Whose asset is it? It's ours. It's the government's asset. This is an accounts receivable on the government's balance sheet. This is what they are owed. That's an asset. That's a part of our net worth. Net worth. Assets minus liabilities. The liabilities being debts. If we forgive this, that's $1.7 trillion in assets gone. Gone. As far as I'm concerned, that's the same thing as to adding it to our national debt overnight. So you're talking $27.8, $27.9 trillion as it stands right now in a national debt. You got to add on $1.7 trillion overnight. $29-some-odd trillion. Who's going to have to pay for that? Everybody else. People who have made sacrifices to pay off their student loan debts, such as me. My family, people who made sacrifices to do that. People who never went to college. People who didn't want to go to college. And people who are never going to go to college are going to have to pay for this. Again, the government picking winners and losers. With the argument being, well, if we eliminate the debt, then, well, the economy will take off. It'll be a boom for the economy because instead of paying off these debts, they can go out and they can spend it on things within the economy. Okay, well, if it's true for student debt, then wouldn't that also be the case for mortgages? Wouldn't that also be the case for credit card debt? Wouldn't that also be the case for other personal loans out there? Auto, I mean, everything. Auto debt, people can't afford cars. Car prices at their highest ever, over $40,000 average. Housing prices are at all-time highs. Mortgage rates are at all-time lows. Going out into the housing market and offering the ask price is almost an insult in some of these markets. Because nobody can afford anything. So wouldn't that logic hold true across the spectrum? Why just student loan debt? And the reason is that's because that's the government's. That's the government's to sort of write off, if you will. But there is no write-off. There is no free lunch. So if their number is $50,000, that means they're improving people's lives by $50,000 because they have their net worth as well. They have their personal assets, their personal balance sheet of assets minus liabilities. Well, they've just reduced their liabilities by $50,000. Their net worth just increased by $50,000. Well, my net worth didn't increase by $50,000 because I already paid mine off. Well, guess what, Jack? The government's going to be writing me a check for $50,000, and I'm not leaving till I get it. So you only hear my voice. This happened, you'll see me on TV. This is going to be the breaking point because I'm going to get my money. Because this is a joke. The moral hazard of all of this, the ethical and moral implications of this are ridiculous. That's an investment. That's something you invested in yourself, your education. Investments don't always go your way. Sometimes you lose 50% of it. Sometimes you lose all of it. Sometimes you expect your payback period to be a time of 2 to 3 years. Well, now it's 5 years. Now it's 10 years. Boo-hoo. That's your problem. It's your problem for not paying attention. It's your problem for going to get a degree in something that doesn't pay anything when you get out. Not my problem. Soon as they forgive it, it becomes my problem because it's now a part of the national debt which I'm responsible for. All the things that people had to sacrifice to pay off those debts, the things that people didn't do otherwise, didn't invest their money because they were paying off the debt. I mean, my goodness, look at the banana republic we're in. Stocks only go up. I mean, if you had put that money instead into an S&P 500 index fund, how much would that have turned into over the past several years? I can do the math. That's one of the rules of the cynic. For God's sakes, know a little math. I can do it. Maybe $50,000 isn't going to be enough. Maybe they're going to have to write me a bigger check. I'll get that too. They better not pass this. Again, by an act of Congress or by executive order. This is ridiculous because it's not going to end. And this will be akin to making a deal with the devil at the end of the day. Believe me when I tell you, because there's no free lunch. It's not going to free anything up. It's just going to cause more problems. And then lastly, we have the circus continuing in town in Washington, D.C., impeachment trial number 2 for Donald J. Trump. I'm not going to go on this for much longer, at least not now, because we're nearing the half-hour point. Suffice to say, this is constitutional. I don't care what the arguments you're hearing out there. This is constitutional. The Congress has the ability to do this. They impeached him while he was still in office. They can impeach him. It doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. You can have your argument and your say on this. I wanted him gone during the first impeachment process. I mean, you just have to understand what type of person he is, who he is as a human being, that he was going to feel vindicated and to continue with these types of actions. And he did. And he did. Doesn't mean he's going to be convicted this time. He probably won't be. He probably won't get enough Republicans to convict him. Of course, so they'll acquit. just like they did last time. So there's a lot of political calculus in this. Now, you can have an argument. Obviously, this is a political process as opposed to a criminal one. So maybe it's easier to go after him here in the political context as opposed to if it was in a court of law on a criminal side of things or vice versa. And maybe we'll have that conversation. We'll see how these things play out as to what type of evidence is brought forward over this coming week. If there are any type of witnesses that come forward at this time, I don't believe there are any witnesses, but that, of course, could change. It's a fluid environment. But it is constitutional. They have the ability to do it. You might come down to say it shouldn't be done. That's fine. But they can do it. So there you have it. The bubble buys a bubble. Probably just getting started. That should tell you all you need to know about the mania and frenzy in which we find ourselves. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.